The Dow hit a new record high today, 23,000. Some worry we're in a stock market bubble. What about the question of whether we're in another housing bubble? Well, according to a new study from UBS Wealth Management, the answer is no, at least not in most U.S. cities. Jonathan Wallachin of UBS Wealth Management joins us from New York. Hi, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jeremy. Nice to be here.
And let's get right down to what you found. What are some of the places around the world that could be in a housing bubble right now, according to your data?
Yeah, good question. And I think I just want to clarify one thing, because we got a lot of questions, especially surrounding the word bubble. And I want to highlight what this report is and, more importantly, what it isn't. And what this isn't is saying these are markets that are in danger of imploding. Rather, these are markets that we think, based on the proprietary index that we use, are certainly in what we view as overvalued or very overvalued territory. The star of the show this year, if you want to frame it that way, is Toronto. And that is really largely a function of how fast prices have risen over the last year. Some of the ones that have been in bubble territory in previous years have been certainly Hong Kong and Sydney, among others. But new additions this year certainly have been, among others, Toronto and Amsterdam.
And interestingly, none of the cities that you've just mentioned are in the United States. And none of the cities that have bubble risk in your survey are in the United States.
No. I mean, I think the one that probably comes closest is San Francisco. Once you get out of the U.S., and people in the U.S. tend to be, you know, a little bit myopic in their focus, when you start to look at, and I'll take Hong Kong, especially if you look at the average size of a dwelling in Hong Kong relative to that in the United States, it becomes even that much more stark how much more expensive a city like Hong Kong or London or Sydney may be relative to their peers here in the U.S.
But in the U.S., you point out that San Francisco and Los Angeles may be overvalued. Their real estate values right now.
Yeah, and this is really largely a function of both price as a multiple of income and price as a multiple of rent. Despite the fact that in both LA and San Francisco, you've seen rents move up dramatically, you've seen home prices move up even faster. Both rents and home prices have outpaced income. So there is an absolute affordability issue here. But on a relative basis, they are still not quite as stretched as some of their global peers.
As someone who lives in Boston and spends a good deal of time in New York, I was surprised to see that both of those cities are considered fair value right now.
Yeah, and I think it's largely – remember, this index is not only absolute, but it's relative to other cities. And so, you know, those who live in Boston, it's had a very nice recovery, you know, since the bursting of the housing bubble. But Boston, much like San Francisco, has been a strong job growth market and a strong income market. And so even though we do view it as higher on the list, it is certainly closer to fair value than some of the other markets.
Chicago is considered to be undervalued.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Chicago is a very interesting market. If you go back just pursuant to the bursting of the housing bubble, Chicago, especially in the suburban areas, you had a lot of companies in the suburban market move back to downtown Chicago. So the rental market has been incredibly strong in Chicago, especially since the bursting of the bubble. And the housing market has been relatively slow to recover. So in a separate analysis that we've done here in the U.S., just looking at home prices relative to income and rents as a percent of one's ownership cost, Chicago screens as one of the cheapest major markets in the – in fact, it's the cheapest major market in the United States.
Hmm. Now, some people look at all of this and say, well, you know, yes, we had a bubble 10 years ago, but this time a lot of these cities where the prices have been rising are actually benefiting from very strong fundamentals. They've got, tech jobs or whatever the case may be, but there are good jobs to support these rising prices. What do you say to that?
I think it's a very, very fair point. And, you know, they always say in our business, never say it's different this time. And I would say, look, we all need to be students of history, but no cycle is ever the same as the next cycle. And I think there are a couple things that are different this time. Number one, the quality of underwriting in terms of mortgage lending is much better, number one. Number two, interest rates are significantly lower than in the last cycle. And you're not having a tremendous amount of overbuilding, especially if you look at markets like San Francisco, Hong Kong and London, there's virtually no place to build. And then if you look at a market like San Francisco, which does have a lot of self-inflicted wounds in terms of local city councils really restricting building, that there is certainly – if you look at the availability of for-sale inventory, it's significantly reduced from the prior cycle. So look, we're always very, very cognizant of – any asset class where prices have run up dramatically, but you have to look at the entire fundamental picture, not just one aspect of it.
Well, how important are interest rates in this rise in prices?
Very, very important. Just a very, kind of rule of thumb. For every one full percentage point move in interest rates, one's monthly price changes by about 12.5%. So, in the United States, the median existing home price is about $260,000. For the median home price across the U.S., it's not a big deal. But when you start to move to some of these cities where the median home price is a couple million dollars, that makes a huge difference. So interest rates are obviously very, very important.
So if somebody's listening to this right now and saying, I wonder what this means for me, should I buy or should I sell or should I hold? What would you say?
Excellent question, and that's a conversation we have with a number of our clients. And when I get that question, I always go back to the clients with a series of questions. Number one, why are you buying? Are you buying for shelter? Are you buying for investment? Number one. Number two, what's your time horizon? Number three, what are your short-term, mid-term, and long-term liquidity needs? Number four, is buying this house going to change your lifestyle? And number five, if prices decrease 20%, will it change your lifestyle? And it's very, very interesting to see the clients' reactions when you ask those questions back to them. Because for those who are buying for shelter who have a longer-term horizon, one is never going to pick a top or a bottom. I don't care what market, whether it's stocks, whether it's housing. It's a fool's game is what it is. Whereas if somebody's buying for investment purposes and this purchase represents a significant chunk of their investment portfolio and will impinge on their liquidity, maybe it's a different consideration. So it's very, very situationally specific.
What does all of this data tell you about the state of the global economy?
I think generally that we are in a period of globally coordinated economic recovery. And we haven't had that in quite a while, and that's a positive. I mean, obviously there's never a perfect all clear, but this is about as good a globally coordinated recovery we've seen in quite some time. Obviously the wild card is going to be China, and there was an article this morning. President Xi is moving back to more of a command and control economy. So obviously China is a wild card, but in general we're seeing across the truly capitalistic world a very, very good globally coordinated recovery, and that is a positive for real estate markets.
That's Jonathan Wallachan of UBS Wealth Management Chief Investment Office. We will link you to their annual Real Estate Bubble Index at our website, hereandnow.org. Jonathan, thank you.
Jeremy, thank you so much for having me.